Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it was one of those really slow news weekends. Nothing happened. There was no coverage. Nobody had to be called in, you know, from the major cable or news networks to cover a breaking story. So it was just a very nice, relaxing weekend. I hope yours was as well.
It was. I was actually out on a Saturday night. We actually had a sitter's having. And then out of the corner of our eye at the restaurant, at the TV above the bar, breaking news. And, you know, everybody knows what happened. So.
Yes, absolutely right. And we'll talk about that a little bit in the second martini. But overshadowed by what is obviously the big story of the weekend was the Zimmerman trial verdict, was the fact that Republicans caught a nice break in the state of Montana when it comes to trying to, if not get back the majority in the Senate, which is plausible, at least make a nice dent in that 10-seat majority the Democrats have right now. And that's because longtime and relatively popular Montana Democratic Governor Brian Schweitzer, who is expected to be the Democratic nominee in the race to replace Senator Max Baucus, has decided he is not going to seek that seat, which basically throws the race, as far as I can tell, Jim, into complete toss-up, wide-open status. And in a state that certainly leans Republican in presidential races and has a conservative bent to it, you got to think our odds are certainly better than they were 48 hours ago.
Correct, Greg. Although I got to point out, as I closed the jolt today, you know, it's not like the last two cycles haven't beaten the excessive optimism out of us of having one winnable race slip through our fingers after another. So Republicans have learned not to get too cocky about anything. Having said that, look, Schweitzer was a two-term governor, pretty darn popular out there. There's an old saying about, you know, the dog riding a bicycle. It's not that he does it well, it's that he does it at all. A, you know, Western Democratic governor who favors bolo ties. It's not that he was a phenomenally successful governor or a remarkably eloquent speaker or any of that stuff. I think that the national media just was so struck by the fact that a Democrat could be elected governor of Montana. They kind of tended to hype him. There was talk about him being Obama's running mate or some sort of cabinet position. I think we can now say that Brian Schweitzer was really never that interested in working in Washington and having this Senate seat more or less gift-wrapped for him, that he's just basically decided he doesn't want to do this. Now, a very interesting quote. I give him credit for honesty, but also kind of interesting assessment there. He says, I'm used to being in charge of things, getting things done. Unfortunately, the U.S. Senate is a place where things die. Now, when you look at the partisan gridlock and the frustration and the fight over the filibuster and all the other things, I guess you could go come to that conclusion. But, Greg, that's going to make that endorsement ceremony kind of awkward, won't it? State Senator John Smith is exactly the right man to go to the place where things die. This man is exactly the right man to not get stuff done. You know, Schweitzer's disinterest in Washington, you know, might even be commendable in some circumstances. I think it does kind of, you know, causing a great deal of heartburn amongst Democrats. They don't really have a terribly deep bench. A couple of rising local officials they think might have a good shot. It's kind of this domino effect for Republicans in that we already have two candidates in it, a former state senator, Corey Stapleman, current state representative, Champ Edmonds. But the really big deal is Steve Daines, who's the current Republican congressman from there. Montana is one of those states where it's because of population. If you're running for Congress, you're pretty much running statewide. So it's right. Not like there's a particular district there. You figure you'd have pretty good odds there. So you put this one into the Republican category. Republicans feeling good about West Virginia. They're feeling good about South Dakota. I think a bunch of red state incumbents that might be in trouble. North Carolina, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alaska. You know, Republicans have a shot at controlling the Senate starting in January 2017. Not a fantastic shot. It's not a lock. You know, still a lot of road ahead and a lot of bounces that could occur. But for Republicans, the outlook in the Senate races for 2014 looks a little bit brighter than it did 48 hours ago.
Yeah, we'll take that. And note of caution to the brand new Republican congressman from the state of Montana, study up on Rick Berg and remind yourself why his one term in the House did not translate into a full term in the Senate, even though that was another statewide race. That was a race not well run, and I'm certainly not comparing the two stride for stride here, but make sure you learn the lessons from a race that definitely should have gone to the Republicans in 2012. On to martini number two now, Jim, and on to the Zimmerman verdict, which I assume everybody at this point knows that he was found not guilty. And they didn't itemize the charges. It was just not guilty. They didn't distinguish between second-degree murder and manslaughter. They just found him not guilty. And then, of course, the reaction poured in endlessly on cable news. The news conferences from the different lawyer teams went on endlessly. And, of course, the conversation spilled into the Sunday morning talk shows, where David Gregory on Meet the Press sought some reaction from Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. And here's what he had to say.
And the president, does he have a role in speaking about it as he did after the shooting?
Well, yeah, of course. And I think the Justice Department is going to take a look at this. They're you know, this isn't over with. And I think that's good. That's our system. It's gotten better, not worse.
And that's just kind of echoing what we heard from Al Sharpton and others on Saturday night, Jim. Just beat the drum. Yeah, this verdict came in, but we're going to still keep pounding on this thing. And at a time when most people just kind of want the story to go away, and other people are hoping that this won't boil over into something worse than it already is in terms of tensions in this country and in that community, Harry Reid not helping the cause at all.
Yeah, I mean, you look back to the federal civil rights statutes and why they were created. The idea was, during the era of segregation and during the civil rights movement, you would have, you know, some sort of terrible crime committed, and the local police would basically not do their job. They would either not investigate or not. You could have, or you could say, a form of early jury nullification. So the federal civil rights statutes are there to guarantee justice where the traditional form of justice has failed or refuses to meet its duties. In this circumstance, I occasionally hear commentators insisting that this wasn't a fair trial, and I'm left asking, how? What was the evidence that was not included? If you're going to argue this wasn't a fair trial, you can't just be, well, it didn't give me the result I wanted. And you can't basically say that only a fair trial will definitely end up in a guilty verdict and an unfair trial will definitely result in a not guilty verdict. I think what we see a lot of, kind of the phrase Ace of Spades likes to use, called wish casting, in which you just kind of project what you want to see onto what you're actually seeing. As I wrote in the Morning Jolt today, I don't really like the idea of having to be a fan of George Zimmerman or rooting for George Zimmerman. I think he used some very bad judgment. I think that had the prosecutors gone for a lesser charge, either manslaughter or even under some jurisdictions of a category called involuntary manslaughter. I mean, you're not intending to kill somebody, but as a result of your actions, you end up killing somebody, and the system of justice determines that you must be held accountable for that. But instead, they went for second-degree murder and basically argued that there was malice in his mind and all that stuff, and they failed to meet that. And even a whole bunch of, you know, folks who were not happy with the verdict say this was a really high bar to clear, and the prosecutors didn't do this. What I don't like here, we hear from Harry Reid, is this idea of, well, we didn't succeed in this court, so let's go for the next one. And the whole idea of the federal system is not supposed to be we didn't get the result we wanted, but this is our second shot at it. What's really kind of frustrating is that apparently you're trying to look for this argument of, like, okay, so what is the justification for this? You can't say that the prosecutors and the police department in Sanford, Florida basically failed to investigate. You can't say that they failed to try to prosecute. They did try to prosecute. It just flat out didn't work. And now there's kind of this very frustrating set of circumstances in which people are basically looking for a reason there. Apparently the FBI in their initial investigation did not conclude that there was any type of racial motive in Zimmerman when he pulled the trigger. He was acting out of self-defense. I suppose we could have some other evidence come to light that would, you know, lead us to this. But basically, what Harry Reid and a whole bunch of other folks seem to be contending here is that if the traditional state system of justice does not fail, the federal government should step in to create a second trial. And that's not really the way the system is supposed to work. There is this concept of double jeopardy. You can't be tried for the same time twice. The state cannot go back, you know, again and again until they get the response that they wanted. We'll see what happens, but my sense is that this is turning into a determination that because people are very upset about what happened with, you know, Trayvon Martin, that Zimmerman's got to end up behind bars somehow, and they'll just find any excuse they can. I wonder if he's getting audited by the IRS at this moment.
I don't know. Anyway, on to martini number three now, Jim, and our opinion of Edward Snowden and our opinion of Glenn Greenwald seem to be evolving week to week here in this NSA leak story. We were relatively pleased to at least have the debate over what the NSA was doing and how it was doing it, even if we pretty much agree that Snowden broke the law. And then we were pretty outraged at Peter King for suggesting that Glenn Greenwald ought to be prosecuted. And now we get this from Glenn Greenwald. He, of course, works for the Guardian newspaper in the UK, who broke the story, and he apparently has access to a lot of the information that Snowden still has. And here's the quote. Snowden has enough information to cause harm to the U.S. government in a single minute than any other person has ever had, Greenwald said in an interview with the Argentinian daily La Nación in Rio. And he goes on to say the U.S. government should be on its knees every day begging that nothing happen to Snowden, because if something does happen to him, all the information will be revealed and it could be its worst nightmare. It almost smacks a little bit like Dr. Evil there, Jim.
Dr. Evil, I'm getting kind of that vibe of Rambo First Blood, Part 2. Or maybe it was Part 3, boys. You know, who are you? Your worst nightmare. That's my Stallone impression for listeners out there. So, I mean, like, he's really acting in your best interest, America. Don't worry. Don't worry. Just because he's threatening you, he's going to be your worst nightmare. We can cause harm to the U.S. government in 1 minute. You know, I guess the idea is that Greenwald is afraid that somebody's going to come along and, you know, make him disappear, snap his neck, you know, some sniper out of nowhere. I guess, look, we haven't been able to do that against real, genuine bad guys. You know, it took us years and years to find bin Laden. The idea that this is going to happen to Snowden doesn't seem terribly likely. But he's got his, you know, backup plan if anything happens to me. You know, we've seen this in all of the, conspiracy movies, the blackmailing the powers that be movies and stuff like that. He's really determined to go to some of the world's most repressive regimes while acting in the name of free speech and liberty and not over oppressive governments. And I don't understand how you can say, hey, I'm hanging out with China and Russia and trying to get to Venezuela, you know, because I believe so much in open government. You know, so just getting weirder and weirder. You begin to wonder if Greenwald and Snowden are not, you know, like this. Just at some point they've decided that they've become heroes in their own action thriller movie. And they're now playing out these roles. You get the feeling Greenwald just doesn't understand how he sounds now. If at any point the phrase "sharks with friggin' lasers on their heads" ends up coming out, it's generally a sign you've gone around the bend, and maybe these guys need to be brought in just for their own well-being. That, you know, you hope they get the help that they need because they're starting to sound a little unhinged. So, one more twist and turn in the Edward Snowden saga.
Snowden will turn himself in exchange for $1 million. From Austin Powers, folks, if you don't know, I'm guessing most of you do. Jim, have a great Monday. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we hope you join us again on Tuesday at this same time for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.